we like to eat. What's on the inside is what really counts. And what we're going to deal with tonight and tomorrow, next Sunday night, in this brief series of two lessons from the Beatitudes on our relationships, is what's on the inside is what really counts. What's on the inside, the heart, really counts. More workers are fired for poor relationship skills than lack of technical abilities. It's not just what we know, it's how we get along with people that matters. There's even a term that's come in use in recent years called emotional intelligence, in contrast to intellectual intelligence. Some people are very intellectually smart but emotionally dumb, and vice versa. Folks will forget what you say, but they will not forget how you made them feel. If they feel loved and affirmed, they'll remember that. They may not remember the conversation one iota, but they'll remember the feelings that go with the conversation. And most of our interpersonal conflicts really aren't over issues as much as relationships, and the issues become a front for a strained relationship. The Sermon on the Mount contains the heart of much kingdom teaching. We're going to look at four principles tonight, and again, four principles again next Sunday night, from the Beatitudes that help us have healthier, simpler relationships in life by working on the heart of the matter. The Beatitudes turn the upside-down thinking of the world right side up. Have you noticed how the world's thinking, the non-Christian worldview, is upside down from the way God created us to be? And what the Beatitudes do, Jesus says, I want to tell you the way things really are. So he uses terms such as this: blessed are the poor in spirit. He said, this is the way that is. There's a blessing in being poor in spirit. There's a blessing in spiritual poverty. There's a blessing in seeing what you are and admitting what you are. We're going to talk about these in detail in just a moment. They're called Beatitudes, then one said, because they are, this is the attitude we are to be. We are to choose. They are the Beatitudes, the attitudes we choose to be. Now, we can't determine our circumstances in life, but we can determine our response to our circumstances. We can choose our attitudes much more than we can change our circumstances in life. I'm not saying circumstances in life don't affect us. Boy, they do. But our attitude toward the circumstances affects us much more. So here we go into the Beatitudes. These are the attitudes that Jesus says he wants us to have, he wants us to choose. And he puts it in positive language by saying, this is the way the world is. The world's got it upside down. The world has it wrong. I want you to turn it right side up. And here's the first one. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. We would say cultivate humility. When we recognize our own spiritual poverty, we're in a position to relate to others as brothers rather than superiors. As long as I think I'm better than you, I can kind of do this, you know? You know what I'm talking about? Put the nose up in the air, keep you at a distance, think I'm better than you, be judgmental towards you, because you're not like me. When we see ourselves as reformed sinners, all of us dealing with sin in our life in various degrees, we're able to recognize the weaknesses of the flesh in ourselves. Paul wrote to the Romans in chapter 12, verse 3, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but think of yourself with what? Sober judgment. To see yourself as you are. You know those curved mirrors you went to the sideshows years ago, and you see the curved mirrors, the convex, and some of the other mirrors, and they made you look fat, or they made you look thin, or they made you look tall, or they made you look short, depending on how the glass was curved. We have a tendency to see ourselves through those curved mirrors, and we don't project the sober or correct flat mirror image of what we really are. Scripture calls on us to see ourselves as we are in the mirror of the light of God's Word, and by that to cultivate humility. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, here's something that you may have thought of a little bit wrongly, so I want to make sure we're on the same page. Real humility is not thinking poorly of yourself. Oh, I'm just no good at all. I'm a failure. I have always messed up. That's not humility. That's negative navel gazing. That's looking at yourself so closely and being so self-critical. That's not what I'm talking about in humility. Real humility is not thinking little of yourself, but only thinking of yourself a little of the time because you're thinking of others a lot of the time. Did you hear that? Real humility is not thinking poorly of yourself. It's thinking less of yourself because you're thinking more of others. You're thinking of others more of the time and less of yourself less of the time. So real humility is not preoccupied with yourself. It's focused on other people. It is recognizing our own spiritual poverty that we begin to relate to others in kingdom ways with Christian humility. Now, many of us have read Romans chapter 7, where Paul says, you know, I've got this problem. I'd like to do good, but every time I'd like to do good, evil's right at the door. I appreciate that God's Spirit moved Paul to write that, aren't you? Because that tells me Paul struggled with some stuff. Paul was not perfect. Paul recognized through his humility his own imperfections. We can respond to others in kingdom ways when we see our own poverty of spirit, our own weaknesses, our own Pauline moments, if I can say it that way. When we, there's no one named Pauline in the congregation, I hope, when I use that word. That's a reference to the Apostle Paul when I say Pauline. Sorry about that. When we see ourselves as we are. So Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit, those who can see themselves as they are, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The man who recognizes his own poverty of spirit and sees himself as he really is, as a saved and reformed sinner, is equipped to treat his wife, his children, and his world with respect. He won't be heavy-handed and highly judgmental. He'll be loving, shepherding, and encouraging. The true humility is the foundation for simpler, healthier relationship because it's a matter of the heart. Remember the refrigerator? What's important is on the inside. If we have such humility, we no longer focus on the issues of life. We focus on the people in our lives more than the issues of our lives. And we develop that humility not only by acknowledging our own poverty in spirit, but keeping our focus on other people and not just ourselves. It's not that we beat ourselves up because we're imperfect. We just think of ourselves with sober judgment. We see ourselves through a straight mirror instead of that curved mirror. The irony is that Christianity works because we do not focus on ourselves exclusively. We focus on God and we focus on other people. And that helps us admit and deal with our own spiritual poverty in a positive way. Now think of somebody you know who is a very humble man or woman. Chances are they're very genuine, have a clear knowledge of their own abilities and limitations. They refuse to either hide or highlight their own weaknesses. Their poverty of spirit recognizes reality. And Jesus says the kingdom of heaven belongs to people like that. Chances are you'll find such a humble man or woman gets along well with others. So characteristic number one in improving those relationships, Jesus says, blessed are the poor of spirit. Cultivate that attitude of humility. Not downing yourself as, you know, the scum of the earth, but recognizing in a real way your strengths and your weaknesses. But the main part of humility is not seeing your strengths and weaknesses. The main part is focusing on others more than you focus on yourself. And that brings that proper perspective. Point number two tonight. Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Jesus says, if you want healthy relationships, learn to express your genuine emotions. Now, I'm not a highly touchy-feely kind of guy. I think you all know that. That's not me. That's not who really I am. I'm not a highly emotionally responsive guy. But my eyes water at the marriage of my kids, the birth of my grandchildren, at a baptism, at a funeral, because those things move us. Those things connect us. We get in touch with our emotions. Now, all of our life is not lived in the intellectual world. I'm not downing intellect. I believe in the power of intellect. And God made us as intellectual beings, but not just as intellectual beings. You probably know in the ancient world there were a number of Greeks that were called Stoics. They were Stoics because they were stoical. Is that amazing or what? They were Stoics. That meant they would not allow their emotions to overcome their convictions in any way. There's an element of good in that, but there's also a lot of bad in that. These Stoics could allow themselves to be attacked, to be hurt, to experience extreme pain, and they would have to grin and bear it. They were the original grin and bear it people. That's where the Stoics were. And sometimes in life we become stoical. We become like them. We just grin and bear it, and we don't express ourselves. We don't express our feelings in any way. And the ability to express emotion is part of a healthy relationship. So Jesus says, blessed are those who are mourning. Blessed are those who can express their hearts. Blessed are those who recognize their emotion and can express that emotion in appropriate ways. Now, I want to be careful here. We are to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Genuinely expressing emotion is the ability to empathize with others. But I want to be careful that we not go the wrong direction on this. I'm not saying we're supposed to vent off our anger on other people. Let that go. Some people say, well, just give them a dose of their own medicine. Just let it go. Vent on them. Tell them what you really believe. Tell them off is what we'd usually say. That's not biblical. Because let's notice the next quality in this list will have to do with self-control. Where Jesus talks about blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Part of the meekness is self-control. And you've got to temper the ability to express emotion with self-control, or things get out of kilter. Have you noticed that? And those who are venting off on other people and expressing their anger violently, that's not the biblical thing to do. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28 says, in your anger, do not what? Do not sin. Don't let the sun go down on your anger, i.e. process it quickly. When we talk about qualities that we look for in elders, when we select elders of a congregation, men of mature Christian character, they're men who are to be temperate. They are able to express their emotions, but under self-control. Many of us have difficulty expressing emotions. We're taught that way. Maybe we had Stoics as parents or teachers, or we've been conditioned in life through difficult circumstances. Emotions are not right or wrong in themselves. They just are. Anger is first an emotion, and later it can be a sinful attitude. But it was meant by God to be a warning mechanism. If our emotional anger is not processed, it can be sinful attitudinal anger results from it. Emotions are simply part of God's system for healthy human beings. If we're afraid of expressing genuine emotion, we have to slowly desensitize ourselves by exposing ourselves to that which we fear. Now, if you fear water, the best way to get overcome it is probably not to ask your friend to push you in the deep end of the pool. The better way is to get into the shallow end of the pool and play there for a while, right? And the same it is in learning to express our emotions in our relationships with others. Go in for the shallow end of the pool first. If you fear public speaking, and by the way, most Americans fear snakes, public speaking, and death, but not necessarily in that order. If you fear public speaking, the best way to overcome it is get up and do it a few times. It doesn't make it perfectly easy. It just makes it more bearable. Think about the man or woman you know who is genuinely in touch with their emotions and can therefore express them appropriately. That person is likely to be highly empathetic. That person is also likely to be highly successful in relationships. So Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are those who are in touch with their genuine emotions and able to express them appropriately. That builds healthy relationships. Number three, as I've already alluded to, is exercising self-control. Jesus said it this way, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. One wag said, well, what Jesus meant is nobody else would want it after the meek were through with it. But that's not really what he has in mind. What is meekness? Blessed are the meek. Well, meekness is not the same as weakness. Moses was known as the meekest man who ever lived, but was Moses a weakling? Far from it. Meekness is strength under control. Strength under control. Meekness is having a sports car with a big engine under the hood and easing out from that stoplight, not laying rubber. That's strength under control, isn't it? Meekness is having a PhD and listening carefully to a kindergartner's question. Meekness is a skilled surgeon who has the ability to cut you open and fix something, but double thinking that and saying, you know, I think we might try medication first or physical therapy first before I begin bringing the scalpel out on you. Meekness is not weakness. Moses, like I mentioned, was a strong leader, but he was a meek man. When Aaron and Miriam questioned Moses' leadership, Moses didn't strike them down in anger. God is the one who disciplined them, not Moses. In relationships, meekness shows itself as strength under control. Power, but controlled, measured use of relational power. The meek person knows not to demand and to have the last word. The meek person listens to others. And this is the way elders and spiritual leaders lead, by listening to others first, by showing meekness, by having power but having it under control. Remember, meekness is having that sports car but easing out from the stoplight, not laying rubber. Okay, how do I develop this spirit of meekness? How do I learn to understand and appreciate self-control? Now, don't you wish you had a pill for it? Especially before you sit down for a church potluck. I need a pill of self-control when I sit down at a church potluck. I don't know about you. Well, first, obviously, we have to desire it. You have to really want that self-control. Sometimes we want it, but we don't really want it. What we're really wanting is our way. And we're just hoping that somehow or other we get self-control in the process. No, that's not the way it works. You have to desire it strongly. You have to be convinced this Jesus way of leading others is better than shouting ultimatums or exercising authority. What Jesus called, that's what the Gentiles do. You know, pulling rank? That's what the Gentiles do. Exercising authority over others. But you have to do more than that. Getting self-centeredness out of the way is really the cue to developing meekness. When you focus enough on the other person's needs that you're not totally consumed by your own. It's really the golden rule in action. What did Jesus say? Whatsoever you would that men do unto you, do you also unto them. That's the King James Version. That's the way I memorized it. We usually shortchange that to the simple words, treat others like you'd like them to treat you. So listen to people, respect people, learn from people. Make yourself vulnerable to others enough to be molded by strength. And here's the kicker. Jesus says, blessed are the meek. That's turning the values of the world upside down. The world does not think being meek is a blessing, does it? The world says, blessed are the strong because they will impose their will on others. But there is a blessing that comes in having a life of strength under self-control. And Jesus said the blessings from the meek is they will inherit the earth. They will get ahead in their relationships when they surrender their selfishness and self-centeredness to being concerned about others. When they realize it's not all about me, it's about we. Think of someone you know who is meek. They have strength, but it's under control. Does that man or woman generally do well in relationships? Probably so. That's the Jesus way. Number four tonight. Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they will be filled. What we're saying here is blessed are those who desire righteousness. To hunger and thirst after righteousness is to want it badly, right? Want it badly. I'm hungering for it. I'm thirsting for it. What is righteousness? Righteousness is right relationships with God and with men. Right relationships with our Creator, yes, that's spiritual righteousness. Right relationship with our fellow man is social righteousness, if you will. When we hunger and thirst after right relationships, we can have them. When we want right relationships more than anything else, we can have them. When you want a right relationship with God, you can have it. When you want a right relationship with someone else, you can have it. Now, I realize it takes two to tango. I recognize that. But the chances of having a right relationship with someone else are greatly enhanced when you desire righteousness. You desire those right relationships. You see, so often the trouble with us is me. I'm getting in the way. This righteousness of right relationships is not just peace between each other, but justice for all. It's a desire for fairness, not just peace. Everybody loves peace, right? But sometimes we don't love justice, and justice is the path to peace. We want things right with others, but not just stopping the war. We want to treat others with justice and respect. When we do that, we're hungering and thirsting after righteousness. When we're more concerned with the process and not just the product of what we want, we're on our way to desiring righteousness because we're concerned with justice. We're concerned about doing it right before God, doing it right before men as best we can. So Jesus tells for us to hunger and thirst after righteousness. And righteousness, again, is defined as having right relationships with others, to doing things rightly. We get what we want. Not just peace, but peace through justice. We don't always hunger and thirst after righteousness, though, in our relationships. Because I'll have an answer, and here's why you won't like it. This is why we don't hunger and thirst after righteousness. The trouble is us, is me. It's self-centeredness. It's, I want my way. I don't care about you. I want my way. That's not righteousness. And that does not lead to good relationships with God or with man. So why do I insist on my own way? Why do I make it all about me? Usually it's a problem with fear. I fear that my needs will only be met when I one-up you and I try to get my way from you. Hungering and thirsting after right relationships involves faith, which is the antidote for fear. Faith that my needs will be met, even if I don't always get it my way. Faith allows me to be open to considering your way. When we live with the vulnerability of faith, or we're handcuffed by fear. No wonder the Apostle John wrote that perfect love casts out fear. Fear has to do with punishment. The person who desires righteousness says, let's do what's right for you. We can work this out. We want the end to be good for both of us. I want to treat you fairly. Does the man or woman who wants others to be treated fairly and justly earn respect and do well in relationships? In general, yes. Tonight we've applied four of the Beatitudes to relationship building. We've talked about the importance of humility, expressing emotion, self-control, and the desire for justice for others, right relationships with others before God and before men. Thinking of these four qualities that we've talked about, probably none of us have the market down on all of them. We probably can't say, I got an A+ on all of those, except humility, of course. We couldn't do that, could we? But you know, we're in the process of growing. So think about one of those that we've talked about tonight. That's your growth area. And begin working toward process to make that a wholer person, be a wholer person by desiring righteousness, by exercising self-control, by cultivating humility, and learning to express genuine emotion. Those things are healthy for us individually, and they're healthy for us in society. They're healthy for us in relationships. Tonight we're going to close with the Lord's invitation. This has not been an evangelistic sermon, but if you have a need of prayer for this body, you need to be baptized in the Lord, you need to be part of God's kingdom. God's kingdom involves confessing your faith in Christ, being repenting of your sins, being baptized into Him. That begins the journey. It doesn't end it, but it begins the journey. Tonight, if you need to begin that journey, do so. Let's stand together and let's sing. Together and let's sing. Together and let's sing.